You are listening to the United States of Football Show, your independent source for American soccer news, presented by Simply Football and World Football Daily. And now your host, Earl Reed. Welcome, everyone. Thanks for downloading and listening to the United States Football Show. Earl Reed here, and, going to be here without Robert Haight. Robert is off on maternity. Want to congratulate him on the new addition to his family. Him and his wife had a... Yeah. Hear some clapping there. I'll introduce the clapper here shortly. Had a child earlier this week, and sounds like everybody's doing well, so we'll look forward to him getting back, if not next week, the following week. Also, just want to quickly apologize for no episode last week. I was out of town, and so rather than try to fudge my way through a show, I decided just to go ahead and take a week off, and I think I'd get a week or two of vacation. But with us tonight here will be Daniel Feuerstein from the Feuerstein's Fire podcast and also from Soccer Newsday. Daniel, how are things going?
Doing very well, Earl. And once again, of course, mazel tov to Robert Hay and his family on the new edition. Very happy for him. But of course, you know, great MLS action, great action from the national team, great find for a certain writer that we'll talk about later. But you have to say that the EPL or the BPL on NBC, it got off to a great start.
Yeah, and I think that's where we'll start. This is definitely, you know, I want to lead this off by saying we call, you know, this is the United States of Football Show, and we definitely want to talk about domestic soccer. But Twitter was alight this weekend because one of the things that really influenced football this weekend within the States was the Barclays Premier League rolling out on NBC and NBC Sports Network. And it was quite a scene starting from about 7 o'clock on Saturday morning. Pretty much through about 2:30 on Saturday, and that picked back up again. We aren't going to go into results. That's not what this is about. Just wanted to talk a little bit about some of the things that we witnessed, which, you know, it looked like there was there were a lot of people interested to see what NBC would bring to the table with the Barclays Premier League. Daniel, I'm not sure how much you got a chance to watch this coverage, but what were your initial impressions with their package that they brought out here for the coverage?
Well, I have to say that the airplane scenes flying overhead some of the grounds in England to let everyone know what was being seen on both NBC Sports Network and on national NBC, I thought it was absolutely brilliant, well done. And at the same time, we know about Robbie Earle from, of course, covering MLS on NBC and his coverage of the Portland Timbers games, including Robbie Musto from ESPN originally. Rebecca Lowe, very professional, and once again, knowledgeable, and they don't dumb down the coverage. NBC has done a very good first week, first round of the Barclays Premier League, and I think they're just going to be very successful for many, many years to come.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say about didn't dumb it down, because last week I think there was a little bit of a scare that came from the NBC Sports Soccer Twitter account, where they had forwarded a little pictorial of basically how a team wins the league or how the standings work. And it was very, very, very elementary. And there was a lot of people that were kind of going off on that. And for them I really didn't see any more of this 101 type stuff that they were trying to do. Instead, they just basically let it roll out. And you're right, they didn't really dumb it down at all. What I wanted to also bring up was, in following Twitter, there was a mixture of the people who like the Premier League and cover MLS some, who just seemed to glow about this. I mean, it was really just a love fest for the English Premier League, and that's not what I really want to highlight. The other thing is that for people who seem to side more towards MLS and maybe even some of the people who work within MLS's media arm, there was also almost a little bit of jealousy that I could sense, and there were some real critical remarks about it. And I don't know if you noticed any of that, Daniel. It's just that
I did
impression. I don't know if I could pull some of this. And then this either last night or the next or this morning, Simon Borg, who is a guy who's well familiar to everybody as being a part of MLS's media, he wrote an article basically purporting that, you know, just because you're the best league doesn't mean you're the best league to watch or something like that. That's basically the gist of his article. And, you know, anyway, what are your thoughts on this whole sort of fiasco and, you know?
Well, let me just say this. Of course, myself personally, look, I want Major League Soccer to become one of the best leagues in the world. Now, I'm aware it's not there yet, but it is growing. And to be honest with you, Major League Soccer has plenty of time on their hands to grow to become one of the best leagues in the world. But they have to understand that. And listen, I understand it too. You can't tell people to stop watching the Premier League or to watch any other top league in Europe because, A, you're going to have American players trying to play in those leagues, and, B, you also have to understand that here in the United States, you know, they're already fans of some of these teams for a long period of time, even before Major League Soccer came around. And, of course, they deviate to those leagues. And NBC, in my opinion, did not deserve that scathing article by Simon Borg. I've always said, look, I'm going to support MLS. I will defend MLS, and I'll be critical of them too when it needs to be. But, you know, if you support an EPL side, please support an MLS side if you're from the United States. That's all I've ever said in, you know, every time I've done my show. And to be honest with you, Earl, it was the wrong thing to do because instead of going and attacking NBC as well as attacking the Barclays Premier League, you know, you have to work with NBC because NBC, yeah, they went to MLS first, and now they have the Barclays Premier League. So it was better if they just shake hands with everyone and just accept it, and then you'll see NBC probably doing better things with MLS as the years go by. This scares me that they might lose NBC at the end of the three-year deal at the end of next year.
Yeah, I mean it. And if you really look at the schedules, you know, when it comes right down to it, there's really no, you know, unless there's a match for MLS that starts at noon on a Saturday, there's really no competition there. I mean, MLS fans are going to be able to watch MLS as well as their team in the Barclays Premier League, which, you know, I follow a lot of MLS fans on Twitter, and a lot of them during Saturday morning, Sunday morning are tweeting about the Barclays Premier League. You're not going to convince anybody to quit following that league. So I think MLS needs to learn how to embrace this and not just be so petty about it to try to trash their coverage. Their coverage was very good compared to the past. I don't know if there's a little bit of animosity because there isn't really a match of the day for MLS, that there isn't a studio show for MLS. They usually do those kinds of things at the park. I think NBC's coverage of MLS is pretty strong. You know, I can't really think of any negatives I've had from that. So, you know, I really don't get it. And maybe I'm reading too much into this, but I don't think I am. I feel a little bit of, like someone's been offended by the fact that NBC has embraced the Premier League and is really putting a full-blown effort to promote, a product that is definitely ready for prime time as far as America goes.
Absolutely. And let me just say this. Even before Major League Soccer was around, NBC, whatever they've done, whether it was originally the official carrier of the AFC NFL games before dropping it and then bringing back with Sunday Night Football, of course, the NBA on NBC, whatever they do for NASCAR and golf, tennis, now the NHL on NBC, even when they used to do Major League Baseball Game of the Week, NBC to me was always the top sports channel, or at least the top sports network that actually did the things the right way. They have done a fantastic job with coverage of Major League Soccer since 2012. Arlo White, Kyle Martino, Russ Thaler, they were always doing a great job. They did everything the right way. Now you have John Strong coming over as Arlo White's going to be doing the Premier League with NBC, and he's back in home in England. You know, this is just wrong because if you thought about it, with the Barclays Premier League coming to NBC, and of course they're still doing MLS, all of the coverage, and of course, you know, when you have an MLS match, you'll talk about what's coming up next in the Premier League. When you have a Premier League match, then you're going to be, well, here's what's coming up with MLS. So much cross-promotion, even with the NHL on NBC, the NFL on Sunday Night Football of the NFL on NBC, there has been cross-promotion, and now it looks like MLS is biting off the hand that's helping them.
Yeah, and I think the one last little point of this I want to make is I also feel like MLS doesn't want any more outside influence as far as how they run their league. And the more that there is a national purview that, you know, that the European League is the way to go. You know, as you get more and more people who watch NBC and see Swansea versus Manchester United, which was the Saturday broadcast. It was on regular old NBC. When you get down to the end of the season and there's a promotion and relegation battle, you're going to continue to get this wave of people who start saying, gee, why don't we have that in this country? Not to say that I advocate going to that kind of system right now. I think that there is an element to the MLS supportive media that just shuts that kind of discussion out. And, you know, I think it is driven by a group of owners that really don't want to talk about it because, number one, they're going to lose their investment if they talk about it and have to implement it. And number two, you know, it kind of distracts from the product on the field, which is pretty good. I mean, you know, it's definitely not at Premier League level unless you're, you know, Simon Borg. You know, his exact quote was, or the title of his article, you know, there is no such thing as a best league in the world. Yeah, take it for what it's worth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I everybody can have their own opinion of that. MLS has its solid points. You're going to get probably a new winner this year, but, you know, we'll have to see. it could still be LA. But, you know, usually you have enough parity where your team comes into the playoff hunt every once in a while unless you achieve as USA. So MLS has its redeeming qualities.
It does.
But if you're talking about from a pure competition and a pure, well, not competition, from a pure style of play standpoint, I think you're going to see more proficiency, more skill in these other leagues. Whether that makes them more entertaining or not is up to the viewer. You know, I mean, some people might get, you know, ticked off that it's always Manchester United, always Chelsea, always Manchester. Well, Manchester City's only won one, but you get the drift. There's only like a few teams that have a chance of winning the Premier League. So, you know, I can understand that.
Yeah.
So, anyway, you have any other thoughts on this before we move on to our next topic?
I just find it funny how Don Garber, during his State of the League address before the season got underway, how, you know, he wants to be one of the top leagues in the world when it comes to the game. But then you get this article yet today or yesterday, and it kind of just basically, you know, it just basically says, well, you can throw that idea out the window.
Yeah. Well, being a top league means that you have to compete to be a top league. And you can't just go and try to undermine efforts that other, you know. And I'll throw this out here for you, whether you care or not, whether you think it's right or not. Why is Stan Kroenke over in the Barclays Premier League? Why are the Glazers over there? Why aren't they buying teams in MLS? I don't know. Maybe it's because, you know, they see a league that's, you know, willing to go to the mattresses to get this market. And what? It's pretty clear right now that they're taking it to the forefront. You know, NBC is going full out, and, you know, MLS had better get its act together if they want to grab back whatever market share the Premier League is possibly going. Yeah, I still think there's some cross love here. You know, as people get drawn to soccer, a good portion are going to find a team to support in this country. So I don't know. I don't get it. I think that they should work together.
Well, just real quick, Kroenke does still run the Colorado Rapids of MLS.
Yeah.
So it's really more the Glazers, I guess Randy Lerner, and maybe another American owner. I forget for the one that owns AS Roma in Italy. So, you know, we'll see what happens, but,
I messed up because I thought that it was Real Salt Lake that changed their ownership just recently.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Yes.
Yeah, so, Well, we don't need to dwell on that too much, but let's move on real quick and talk about this article that came out from Neil Morris, who writes for the Indie Week. I don't know if it's I guess it must be a magazine or maybe a local newspaper down in, is it in the Charlotte area?
It's actually the Raleigh, Durham, and Cary, North Carolina. It's in the Triangle. It's the Independent, and he'll be a guest on my show as well tomorrow, this coming Monday on the 19th, to talk about that great find. Or shall we? Do we have any Raiders of the Lost Ark theme music? Because I'll tell you, boy.
This was definitely a fascinating article. Yeah, you definitely had that feeling because some of us, like myself, are relatively new to soccer. But up until, I guess, 2008 or 2009, there was a Soccer Hall of Fame. And it was in Oneonta, New York, which is just outside of Binghamton, which is in the southern tier, what's called the leather stocking area of New York State. Not far from Cooperstown either, which is where the National Baseball Hall of Fame is located. I guess that at one point some people got together and said, well, Cooperstown has baseball. Why don't we have a Soccer Hall of Fame? And and they put it together, ran on pretty much a loss every year for a long time. And eventually, like I said, 08 or 09, they packed up their doors. But this was after, I guess, they collected a bunch of different materials from the old NASL and all that stuff. But basically, they packed it all up and shipped it down to the Raleigh-Durham area to a warehouse, which is down there. And that's where all of this these artifacts and just historical items and whatnot are stored. And it's kind of a sad article in a way. I don't know how you feel about it, Daniel, but it just, to me, it would be so awesome to be able to get a chance to take a look at what's in there.
Oh, absolutely. I've met Jack Huckle in the past when he was over when the MetroStars/Red Bulls used to play at the Giant Stadium. He was waiting for Steve Ralston to get his record-breaking career assist record against when he was playing for the Revolution. I know he got the jersey from Ralston. I think he got some, maybe the ball as well. I understand, you know, a lot of great artifacts from back in the day, you know, even all the way back to maybe the old ASL, ASL2, some MLS jerseys as well. It's just a shame we don't have a Hall of Fame to call our own. Not to say that Oneonta was not the best place, but at the same time, it was kind of far from New York City. And I still feel that somewhere within an MLS city, or maybe even an area near an MLS city that's a lot closer, that they should, hopefully someone will build a brand new Hall of Fame. Because, you know, look, I love Cooperstown. I love Springfield for the NBA Hall of Fame. Of course, Toronto has the Hockey Hall of Fame. Canton, Ohio has the NFL, the American Football Hall of Fame. You know, this sport in this country, it has history. Granted, maybe here and there it's been broken up or not consecutive enough, but we do need our own Hall of Fame, and you just feel bad for those former players that get elected to the Soccer Hall of Fame, and they wear those red blazers with the logo on it, but they don't go to, but you don't see their picture in a Hall of Fame.
Now, the one aspect of this article that kind of took me aback, it was actually shoved in at near the very end of it, and the curator in the museum, I forget what his name was, I should bring up the article, but from the museum there in Oneonta, basically said that owners like Phil Anschutz and Lamar Hunt, you know, actually came to the Soccer Hall of Fame at various times, and they were asked to contribute to help fund the Hall of Fame, and basically that fell on deaf ears. They were not interested in doing that, which, you know, to me, I mean, I understand that MLS owners, I think, feel like any remnants of the NASL are viewed as soccer failures, and so you really want to tread lightly when it comes to those. But to me, it's still like you have a chance to preserve what history there is in this country and to show it for everybody. And yes, maybe it wasn't in a great place as far as, you know, it's not near any soccer hotbed, so to speak. But, why not buy it out and say, hey, I want to establish this thing in a place that's, you know, maybe Los Angeles, maybe Chicago near the soccer house.
Mm-hmm.
Any number of other cities where soccer is relatively well supported. There's a couple in the Northwest now, I'm sure, that could, the trouble with each of these cities is that this is such a vast country that it's very difficult to, some people will come to see it, but it's, soccer still hasn't evolved to the place in this country where it's going to be a real draw. So, I mean, do you think it's too much to expect of a Hall of Fame to be able to turn a profit? I mean, I even think that in this article they said that the Hall of Fame's, if it weren't for some major benefactors, would probably go under, of the big sports in this country.
Yeah, very true. And, it's a sad thing because here's the thing, Lamar Hunt, and I have the article in front of me, he's on the board, and, Lamar Hunt is the only sports team owner that I'm aware of that was inducted into two separate Hall of Fames. The National Football League Hall of Fame, in Canton, Ohio, because he runs the Kansas City Chiefs. And, he's also a builder, a founder of, for the Soccer Hall of Fame in Oneonta. So, I don't want to speak negatively about Lamar Hunt because he's done so much for this great sport here in this country for American soccer. But still, it's just really a little disheartening to hear that.
Yeah. And, I mean, obviously his name's on the trophy for the U.S. Open Cup.
Correct.
I'm not trying to badmouth anybody. All I'm saying is it's unfortunate that this is sitting in a warehouse. Hopefully through, we were just talking about Barclays Premier League. I'm hoping through exposure via this, exposure maybe through some other types of media such as talk radio. Maybe some sports talk radio will start picking this up and talking a little bit about the English Premier League. Maybe some people start watching MLS that haven't watched it in the past. I don't know. But all in all, I want to see soccer fandom in this country grow to the point where we can support a National Soccer Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
And be able to see it sustain and not be something that ends up just crapping out after, 20 years like it happened in the past. Any final thoughts on this?
I just would like to see if there's a possibility of building a brand new Soccer Hall of Fame building, a physical building. I hope it's somewhere near an MLS city, maybe near Red Bull Arena in Harrison. Hopefully maybe Chicago, like you said, maybe even our nation's capital in DC United near there. That they can build. I mean, we'll see when that new stadium gets built. But back on the Hall of Fame real quick, I just want to see it be physically built and so we can really celebrate the game the proper way.
Absolutely. I think that's, that's something that we'd like to preserve. We'd like our kids to know about some of the greats from the past and the greats of the now. I mean, I'd love to be able to share with my kids about, the current generation, Landon Donovan's, the Clint Dempsey's, when, those guys are on TV talking about soccer, in the 2020s and, whatnot,
right.
They'll be our John Harkses and, Brian Dunseths.
Exactly.
Eric Winaldas. So
that's true.
Yeah. So this is going to end our first segment. When we come back, we have some other news that we want to talk about. United States men's national team played a friendly over in Europe. We have a DP deal to talk about in L.A. land and some other stuff. You're listening to the United States of Football Show. We are sponsored by Simply Football and World Football Daily. Reluctant urgency, the task we lay before them. A terrifying creature rose up from the ground, kinda like off the magic dragon, separated by a bristle down. So said he, God save the queen, I'll die to bring you down. And we're back here on the United States of Football Show. Earl Reed here with Daniel Feuerstein, a guest here tonight. Well, we're again without Robert Hay. Recording this on August 18th on a Sunday night, just in case anybody was wondering. You can follow us on Twitter, US of Football, F-U-T-B-O-L. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/USOFootball. And there's a bunch of places you can listen to us. We, you know, if you want to hear it first off, hot off the press, go to iTunes and search on United States of Football and subscribe. You can, yeah, it'll bring it right to your favorite listening device as soon as it's, as soon as you ask it to. But it should come up a lot much quicker than if you try to go through some of the other methods like Stitcher and whatnot. So, and you can also rate us on iTunes as well. We would appreciate that. Give us a rating. Give us some feedback. All those good things. I guess all of the formalities are now out of the way, Daniel.
All of that just to get on a podcast. Look at that.
Yeah, let's just mention your show real quick, Florestein's Fire Internet Soccer Show. It's a live show. Why don't you just mention briefly, I think you already partially mentioned your next show, but go ahead.
Well, definitely, once again, it's on blogtalkradio.com, blogtalkradio.com/Florestein's Fire. It's the American Internet Soccer Show discussing everything American soccer, MLS, NASL, a couple of times the USL Pro League, US Open Cup, CONCACAF Champions League, and I cover the New York Red Bulls for SoccerNewsDay.com, and 1 hour national, second hour local, all on the Red Bulls.
So listen to Daniel, listen to his show. I'm on there on occasion when there's some big U.S. men's national teams matches or when he really wants to get down and dirty and talk the Union. So
that's right. I do, yeah, I have to trudge through all that dirtiness when it comes to the Union. But but let's go ahead, Earl, and
yeah, let's talk about... Yeah, we're going to move on to the United States men's national team who faced Bosnia over in Sarajevo over, I guess it was on Wednesday of last week. Bosnia went up 2-0 by halftime, but the United States were able to come back through an Altidore hat trick, and I'm trying to remember who got that other goal. That's right, forward from Seattle, Eddie Johnson. He actually opened the scoring for the U.S.
Yeah, and
so they got the 4-3 victory because Bosnia picked up a late goal to try to make it interesting, but the Americans held on. So what are your thoughts out of this match?
Well, first of all, that first goal they allowed by Edin Dzeko, I thought that was a very bad goal that they allowed. I mean, Tim Howard did a great job to make the save, but of course, no one there to help him clear out at least a rebound opportunity, and Dzeko did put it in. Just a bad start, but they got better as the first half got along. Unfortunately, they went down 2-0. Ibišević made it 2-0. But you have to say credit to Jurgen Klinsmann that they kept this winning streak going at 12. And I think this is the longest winning streak that I can remember that a U.S. men's national team has ever had, whether it be through friendlies, qualifying, or Gold Cup confederational play. And, you know, seeing Jozy Altidore actually scoring a goal in 5 straight games is a hell of a record, especially from a forward like him who has been deemed future of the national team, and now he's finally able to showcase why he was considered the future for our national team. But, you know, let me just say this, Earl. Jurgen Klinsmann, where I got concerned on how he was managing or coaching our national team last year in the semifinal round, a couple of hiccups here and there, even though they did win these games against teams like Antigua and Barbuda, and even Jamaica was a weak opponent, but they lost to them anyway at the office in the semifinal round. He has, for some strange reason, and don't get me wrong, it's a great thing, he has strengthened the player pool. The depth that we never thought we'd ever see has now become a strength. All the talk about Mexico and under-17s winning the World Cup at home, the under-23 Olympic team winning gold in London, you talk about everything that was going on here for Mexico, oh, here comes Panama, here comes Costa Rica, and you know what? Now, the USA has 13 points in their top of the table in the Confederational Hexagonal World Cup qualifying.
Yeah, and like you said, they've been on a 12-game winning streak. They won the Gold Cup.
albeit with a slight, you know, somewhat weakened team, let's say, but you still have a guy in Landon Donovan that was, you know, has been the talisman for this team for who knows how long. I mean, it's just been, you know, have him come into that Gold Cup team. I mean, it's just, you know, unified the team, and, you know, they just played their hearts out for a month there in July. So, yeah, it's a great time for them to be doing that. But they also introduced a couple of new players on the team. John Anthony Brooks, who I guess he wants to go by John Brooks by everything that I heard after, I've heard both over the years. You know, he's come in, he's plays for Hertha Berlin over in the Bundesliga. And, you know, it was a little bit of a rough first game for him. I don't think he was done any favors by pairing with Jeff Cameron at the back. He doesn't play much center back anymore. So for Cameron to be in that kind of a role, I don't think that helped Brooks much. And I think it showed. Both, like you said, on that first goal for Bosnia by Edin Dzeko, both of those guys were slow getting back. They were both raising their arms looking for an offside call rather than trying to help Tim Howard. So, and then the other guy, but I think it's a start, you know, and you need to have guys like Brooks to challenge, Omar Gonzalez and Matt Beisler and make sure it's not just a lockdown, you know, surety that's all, you know. Klinsmann has put an emphasis on challenging for positions. And so this will definitely give each of those guys a challenge. And we'll talk more about Omar here in a second. But the other guy that got an appearance in the second half was Aaron Johansson. He came on as a winger. What did you think from him?
Now, I don't know why the Icelandic Football Federation is upset. He was absolutely brilliant. I mean, granted, you would have loved to have seen him convert one of those chances, but the confidence he had with the ball at his feet, how he took on defenders, how he was able to make a couple of cuts here and there, and when he got in the area, he took his shot. Once again, you feel bad for him that he did not convert, but you can tell why the Icelandic Football Federation was so upset that he switched national teams from Iceland to the USA. And of course, he plays over at AZ Alkmaar in the Eredivisie, where Jozy Alto used to be, now with Sunderland in the EPL. You know, this kid, outside of Altidore, who has been building and learning and becoming this confident striker that we all thought he was going to be, and he is this now, this kid already has his confidence, and he's not backing down.
Yeah, well, and you need to have someone. I mean, we've seen Hercules Gomez have a little bit of a letdown here in the last few months for the national team. You haven't seen him be quite as, you know, pivotal as what he was for a period of time. Eddie Johnson has been pretty good. You just hope he can continue. But if you can have another forward, especially one who is, you know, over in Europe and playing for you know, a team that Altidore succeeded with, hey, let's get him in here. And he was born in Alabama, which you gotta love guys that were born from in Alabama, you know. All the time. So, but yeah, I mean, so yeah, I think this is exciting times for the U.S. team again, winning streak. Getting players that just want to play for this country, you know. Obviously, almost booking your World Cup ticket is, you know, helps probably in that situation. But you know, these guys are young kids, and they could be really feature for the team for a while if they, you know, bet in and show what they can do. So, you know, I think good times are ahead for the team. So.
Oh, I absolutely agree, and I think they only need 1 point to advance officially into the World Cup for next summer.
Yeah, just get a couple wins against Costa Rica and Mexico, and it'll all be good.
You're absolutely right. Let's move on with Omar Gonzalez. So now, obviously, he is officially a designated player for the Galaxy. And, you know, this is where I think, to be honest, I don't think he should have bolted for Europe. I think he should have stayed in MLS with this new contract. And he's going to get, obviously, a pretty good price for staying with the Galaxy a couple more years. But maybe after this current contract is done, that's when he should go abroad, whether it be down in Mexico, where teams wanted him as well,
They saw him for the national team at the Azteca with a 0-0 draw back in March. Or maybe if he does go to Europe, it's fine. Because here's my thing, Earl. You know, when you see players, you know, like a Breck Shea, a Jozy Altidore, and a couple of others, you know, when they move away and they're playing for a team that they say they want, I mean, they're paying all this money to bring him, to bring these players over from the U.S. into their system, you know, they just don't get the opportunity because they're considered more as a depth roster spot than being actually a starter. I mean, I don't know if they're told you're going to start, but at least they get more clout and clarity with the Galaxy, and then when he does get that opportunity to go abroad, then they'll consider him into a starter maybe as a, in European clubs.
I mean, that's a fair point. Or, you know, the other thing is, for instance, Tim Ream goes to Bolton, they get relegated, so then he's playing for a championship team, and that team doesn't even get on Jurgen Klinsmann's radar much. Now, Ream was in this most recent friendlies roster. I don't believe he made an appearance.
No, he did not.
Yeah. So, you know, he's been out of the loop here for a while, and, you know, the last Gold Cup in 2011, he didn't do himself a whole lot of favors.
Oh, absolutely not. No, and you know my stance about Tim Ream. I felt he should have stayed in MLS. He needed to fix his form. He did. Look, I understand if the money's there, you got to go and take it. But once again, sometimes it's not about the money. Sometimes it's about fixing your form, making sure you get enough under your belt so you can make a better move to a better side, whether it's in South America, Central America, Mexico, or in Europe, wherever you're going to go. And that was my problem with it. And unfortunately, he's paying the price.
And this is the other thing that I see sometimes. Maybe this is the wrong impression. Sometimes I wonder if these players really want to play. Like, it's their intention to look for the Premier League, especially in England. And, you know, there are other leagues over there. You know, I think if, you know, you've seen Sasha Kljestan get opportunities to play for the national team, even though he's in Belgium. You know, you have, the Netherlands, like you said, the Eredivisie. You have the Bundesliga in Germany. You know, there are plenty of leagues over there, Serie A. I don't know about La Liga, but, you know, there are leagues where these players could get some opportunities. But the nice thing about the English Premier League is you don't have the language barrier that you might in some other countries. Like if you went and tried to play in Germany, if you don't know German, you know, you're going to need a translator, and, you know, there could be that kind of a barrier. Whereas, you know, if you can get in, you know, get a bid from Stoke City, for instance, who seems to have a lot of American players, or Sunderland, or, you know, take your pick, Aston Villa, I forget who's there, is it Eric Lehigh, maybe, I mean, just basically, Guzan's there as well, but yeah, you end up not having to worry about learning new language, and so, I don't know, I think you get into the Premier League over there, and all of a sudden, like you said, you're swamped and behind all these other players, and Breck Shea, who knows if he's going to get any minutes, you know, under Mark Hughes right now, so, but anyway, back to Omar, I don't know, I'm not sure that, you know, if LA obviously can pay him, my question is, they now have no flexibility as far as DPs go. All of their DP slots are full, so what's going to happen? I can't really see them holding it this way for very long. Do you think Landon, his contract's up at the end of this year, do you think he's going to look for his European vacation?
I think so. No, I
got a vacation. But.
Well, I know what you're saying. Play on words. But no, I think Donovan, you know, look, he's done everything he can for MLS. I really think that it's time for him to move forward and go and play in Europe. I mean, look, obviously Moyes is with Manchester United now, and it's Roberto Martinez that's running Everton at the moment. I think it's, if Martinez wants him, I think he'd still be a good fit for Everton. If not, then maybe, who knows, maybe if Wayne Rooney is going to keep on pouting and coming off as a substitute since he doesn't want to be with Man United anymore, I say, very simple, I say give Donovan an opportunity at Man United. I don't think Fergie would have let him play there, but, you know, I think Donovan would work well under Moyes in his system over at Man United.
Yeah, I don't know, but I mean, we're probably going to have to wait at the very least until he could sign a pre-contract here up until, you know, January, or he could just wait till January till the window opens and goes. He could re-sign for LA. I mean, there's still that possibility. So, yeah, I don't know. I think for LA, and from what I understand, Robbie Keane also recently re-signed. So if they want to have a spot open, they've either got to, A, let Donovan go, which maybe this whole Clint Dempsey thing is the window to allow Donovan to go and pursue what he can for the last couple of years of his serviceability to Europe. You know, either that or MLS starts looking to expand the DP slots, which that's a possibility too. It wouldn't surprise me. Things usually change when the Galaxy need it to change. So not to sound conspiracy, but I just think that they're sort of the front, you know, the leading edge for the league, and if they're willing to go and spend money, extra money, then the league usually lets them. So, and then everybody follows suit, including Red Bulls and probably now Seattle.
Exactly.
But one caveat to the whole expanding the DP slots. How would Shalrie Joseph feel about that?
Yeah.
Because, you know, so you just had that situation where Shalrie Joseph had to restructure his contract in order for Dempsey to come into Seattle. So, you know, there's that situation. Right now, let's switch gears and talk about Dempsey, because I figured I'd get your point of view on it. We talked about it 2 weeks ago. What do you think about Dempsey and what he's done so far and what you expect out of him coming to MLS in Seattle?
Well, right now, I think it's a great thing that Clint Dempsey has returned to Major League Soccer. Obviously, it just feels like that he wasn't going to be used at all at Tottenham, maybe very sparingly. Obviously, I keep hearing from some of our friends that are Tottenham supporters that through Twitter and the blogosphere that Clint Dempsey had his opportunity and he was never going to crack the starting 11 because, you know, Bale is still there. But even if Bale was going to go and move to Real Madrid, as much as he wants to be there, there are other people in front of Dempsey. And my opinion is that, you know, look, Dempsey's a national team player. Granted, you know, it's the U.S. national team, but I'd like to think that, look, if you're a national team player and you're playing for one of the top clubs in the Premier League, you should be in the starting 11, or at least you should be used as much as possible. And, you know, look, good for Dempsey. He comes back to MLS. He's still the captain of our national team. And as long as he still plays at a high level for the Sounders back in MLS, then you know what? I don't have a problem with it. And, you know, look, like we've said many, many times, you know, it's time for Major League Soccer to now start changing up the rules, or at least not so much changing the rules in the negative way, but in a positive way about player acquisitions, getting rid of, you know, the next CBA that's going to be coming up in about maybe another year or two, I'm not sure, but to basically just, you know, make the salary cap, the salary caps bigger, and just to get rid of some of these single entity rules that are probably hampering the clubs right now.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with single entity, but I definitely agree that there needs to be some sort of an adjustment of the salary system to help bring up the quality of play that you can hopefully start to, increase the other eight players on the field if you have three DPs, because that's where a lot of your quality of play is going to come from. You know, if you have three great players and then you have, you know, a couple of guys right out of college in the midfield, that's where your weaknesses are going to be. So, and just in general, players in the league actually get paid closer to what, you know, we all saw Clint Irwin's piece in, I forget which magazine it was, a couple weeks ago, detailing his life as an MLS goalkeeper making $35,000 a year. So,
yeah.
With a second job and everything. Speaking of Colorado, Colorado gets a couple players. Gabriel Torres, who featured for Panama at the forward position in the Gold Cup and also, I believe, in qualifying. He has been signed by Colorado. And a Uruguayan international named Vicente Sanchez, another forward, he is going to be featuring for Colorado in the coming years. So the Rapids, this is their first venture into the DP system. And so now every team has a DP in the league. So good times for the league. What do you say?
No, I agree. I mean, look, sooner or later, some of these teams that didn't have a DP, look, Colorado won the MLS Cup that one year against FC Dallas without a designated player. But as the years went on, you really need a designated player to help out a good young team like what the Rapids have. Obviously, Oscar Pareja is finally getting his team to play at a better positive role going on. And look, good for them. I mean, Gabby Torres for the Panamanian national team in the Gold Cup this past July. And, of course, one of the top clubs in Uruguay from Nacional, Vicente Sanchez, comes over and gives Colorado some help. So you know what? Good for the Rapids. They're getting in sync with the rest of the clubs in MLS, and they're doing things a lot better. And we'll see what happens as the season continues on here in the regular season.
The West just keeps getting stronger and stronger. And one last point to mention, former men's national team star who had has had a really difficult go of it the last few years, had that horrific car accident, Charlie Davies. He's returning to MLS. New England has gotten him on loan from his team. I believe that's in Netherlands. Is that right?
I'm assuming so. What club was that called?
I'll check it out here. But New England had to trade for the rights for his rights because DC still had the rights to Charlie Davies from his stint there a couple years ago. But New England has now gotten a hold of Charlie Davies. Randers FC is where he's at. So yeah,
okay.
That actually may be in Belgium. No, that's Denmark. So I'm all messed up with my Western European geography. I thought geography was my strong point, but I guess not.
That's okay.
It's one of my strong points. But anyway, it's nice to see Charlie Davies get back to MLS. He has succeeded here in the past. I think MLS helped him get back up on his feet after his troubles that he's had getting back from major injuries. What do you think, Daniel?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, Charlie Davies, he's trying to get back into the swing of things, trying to find a way to get back to his national team. Maybe Randers wasn't the place to be, so he comes back to MLS. Hopefully for Charlie Davies, he'll have a better success in MLS this year than he did his first time around with DC United. So, look, you know, Charlie Davies, you know, if that car accident in our nation's capital didn't happen, who knows, maybe he'd be up alongside with Jozy Altidore as the scoring tandem up front.
Yeah, that's definitely true. So, good luck to him up in New England. Hopefully, he has a way to find success, and maybe he can get his way back into Jurgen Klinsmann's radar. So, that's the end of the second segment here on the United States Football Show. When we get back, we're going to go through the Major League Soccer scores for the weekend and also some U.S. Open Cup action from, a week or so ago. You're listening to the United States of Football Show. And we're here for the final segment on the United States of Football Show. That band that you hear is the B-Side Shuffle. We are glad that they are our house band. We hope you like their music. If you do, go check them out on bsideshuffle.com. All one word. And with that, Daniel, Daniel Forrestein's here with me. I'm Earl Reed. We're going to go through and do what we call MLS Glance. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about New York, Philadelphia, because Daniel is a guy who covers the New York Red Bulls. I'm a guy who covers Philadelphia Union, or at least I did. Well, I still do. I still write for Philly Soccer Page. And
yes, you do.
I'll have an article coming out on Tuesday this week. So, but anyway, you were there, 0-0. Kind of a result that it looked like both teams were looking for.
No, that's the result that Philly was looking for. Actually, what the Red Bulls were looking for was to pound it into the back of the net. But give credit to John Hackworth, frustrated the Red Bulls because he clogged the middle of the field. Zach McMath actually had a very good match in net, even though Luis Robles, didn't have that much till late in the match, where he made a fantastic one-handed diving save to keep Philadelphia scoreless. The problem was that Philly also kept New York scoreless. But still, you just have to say that this was a game where, you know, points were up for grabs, and you can tell the last time John Hackworth and Philadelphia were here was around end of March, beginning April. He was very perturbed that they haven't taken any points out of Red Bull Arena. Well, this is the first time it's happened, but this is the first draw between the two sides.
Yeah, definitely I agree with you that Philadelphia is glad to get out of there with a point. They've struggled up there in Harrison, so yeah. And New York can't be too unhappy with a single point because they're still, I mean, they could have probably leapfrogged, although I guess Kansas City plays this evening against San Jose. But, you know, New York could have fully grabbed first place going into that match if they had won. So, but they're still hanging around in second place, and depending on the result tonight, may have a tie for first if all goes well. So
We'll see what happens. Well, Earl, how about Montreal taking on DC United back at Saputo Stadium, or Stade Saputo?
Yeah, so here we go with MLS Glance. Montreal Impact 2, DC United 1 up at Stade Saputo. This match really could have been 6-1 because Montreal just had so many chances, especially in the first half, but they wasted them. But Marco de Vaio got the opening goal just before the break. Then after the break, ejections to both coaches, Marco Schalabaum and also Ben Olsen. They were upset with each other about James Riley going in hard on Justin Mapp along the sideline, and so they kind of boiled over. They both got kicked, and then Connor Doyle equalized it on a nice pass from Luis Silva. Toronto's still kicking themselves over that one. With about 10 minutes left in regulation, but De Vaio had the last laugh. 2 minutes after Doyle's goal, he finishes a fast break and finished off DC United with for the 2-1 victory.
And, of course, the Columbus Crew are a 2-0 winners over Toronto FC over at Columbus Crew Stadium. Once again, Federico Higuain, he's doing it again, gets himself another brace. He's got 4 goals in these 2 games. And once again, he's just showing why he's one of the top signings from last year's summer window for the Columbus Crew. And let's see if they're going to climb up the ladder in the Eastern Conference.
And the Revs douse the fire up at Gillette Stadium 2-0. The big story from this match was Juan Agudelo. He had probably what will be one of the goals of the year candidates. A little back heel flick that was sort of overhead. It just I saw it described as a scorpion kick, and it beat Sean Johnson. The only thing is that I'm not 100% sure that it crossed the line. The assistant said yes, so I guess we go with it. But all in all, it was an amazing piece of skill that he was able to weight that just right. And then another fracas at this one, and it got Frank Klopas sent off. But when it came right down to it, Kellen Rowe, he missed a chance late, but then he got another one and made it finish and made it pay for the insurance tally in second half stoppage time, and that put New England through. They are still hanging around that playoff race in the East.
Absolutely, and of course the Houston Dynamo at home, winning by a score of 3-1 over the Seattle Sounders. It was Giles Barnes with a brace in the 17th and the 21st minute, so 2 goals within a span of 4 minutes. And then Shaury Joseph pulls one back in the 65th minute from Mark Birch, but Will Bruin scores to make it 3-1 final in the 74th minute. No ejections in this game, but still, though, Houston looking pretty solid again back at home.
And next up, we go to the West, and Colorado Rapids defeated the Vancouver Whitecaps 2-0. Another clean sheet for Clint Irwin. This guy, he's kind of an unsung hero in this league. Really has filled in well for the Rapids. And they're in second place right now in the West. Deshaun Brown, Edson Buttle get the goals. And Danish keeper David Wusted for Vancouver. Started his first match for the Whitecaps, and I thought he probably should have had Brown's goal, the first goal. It was pretty much right just over his head, and he didn't swat it away, so that, I thought that was a little bit of a laugher. But Colorado, the surprise team this year, it looked like it might have been FC Dallas, but they've gone way down. Now it's the Rapids, so good show for them.
And, of course, the LA Galaxy at home defeating Real Salt Lake by final of 4-2, all of them in the second half. It looked like RSL was going to take it home there when João Plata buried one in the 53rd minute, but here comes the Galaxy. Robbie Keane with a hat trick in the 56th minute, 67th and 86th. In between those goals, Omar Gonzalez, after signing his new designated player contract, gets his tally in the 75th minute, and Robbie Findlay in second half stoppage time, even though too little too late, makes it a respectable score of 4-2. But once again, those Galaxies, wearing their original MLS mishmash color jerseys, I wish they'd just bury that one. I can't stand that one anymore. But anyway, LA wins it by a final of 4-2 over Real Salt Lake.
Yeah, we all love those jerseys, don't we?
Speak for yourself.
Portland takes care of business at home against FC Dallas 2-1. This is just continues to be a horrible run for Dallas. They got a point recently against the Galaxy, but besides that, they've just been horrible. Ryan Johnson with a powerful header opens the scoring. A fella named Diaz, I forgot what his first name was, but he just came on board for Dallas. He got their goal to equalize just immediately after Johnson's goal, but then Darlington Nagbe pushed the Timbers ahead for good. I believe it was just about after the half-hour mark, and Portland was able to hang on in that match, taking the 2-1, getting all 3 points, and they are leading the West. So they are just doing very, very, very well this year. Oh, wait, no, they aren't leading. They're in third place. Never mind. I should have kept
going to the end. By the way, it's Mauro Diaz.
Mauro Diaz.
Mauro Diaz. So let's take a look. So just for Earl's sake, in
for
the
my
Western
sake.
Conference, Salt Lake is in first, Colorado's in second, Portland's in third, LA Galaxy in fourth, Vancouver in fifth, but FC Dallas is down in seventh.
Seattle has finally passed them.
Yeah.
It wasn't of any help from this weekend's match where they lost, but... it's Dallas. They look like they were golden for a top three finish, and now they're in the crapper. So
exactly.
And we might as well go over the East too. Kansas City, they still have a match tonight, but they're in first place based on points per game over the Red Bulls. But they're tied on points. So with 39, Montreal is hanging around at third. The Union were able to go into a point tie with them, but they're still in fourth place again on points per game. Houston fifth. New England is hanging around in sixth, and Chicago, their loss keeps them from moving any further up. They look like they might have been making a move. Columbus is in eighth, Toronto, and of course FC Shambles Robert, had an addition to his family, but DC did not have any additions to their point total this weekend. So,
well, you know, that
unfortunately.
That could be forgiven if DC United does the unthinkable on October 1st. And, of course, that's the Open Cup. Because
what a segue.
Unbelievable, because let me say this. DC United and dead last in the East and dead last in the league altogether. If Chivas USA does not have 5 points more than DC, Chivas would be dead last in the league. But, they go to Toyota Park in Bridgeview, Illinois, outside of Chicago. They get a goal late in the first half, a goal early in the second half, and they defeat the Fire that were going to attempt for their fifth Open Cup championship, but that went for naught. And then, of course, Real Salt Lake hosting the Portland Timbers, leading 2-0. Portland pulls one back just within the final seconds of regulation in the second half, but nothing else happened in the second half stoppage time, and the Portland Timbers fall to the Real Salt Lake 2-1. But that means for Real Salt Lake, they will host the Open Cup final on Tuesday night, October 1st, and that will be seen live nationally on Gold TV. If you're still able to get it, like I'm still able to get it, go ahead and watch it. Try to catch it at a friend's place. I don't know if any bars will be hosting it because it's not on DirecTV or Dish Network anymore, I don't believe. But
First of all, I allowed Daniel to go ahead and talk about this because, number one, he covers this stuff on his internet soccer show all the time.
Yes.
He is a huge, huge proponent of the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. So, you know, there's no one better to talk about this than him, except for maybe the guys with the cup.us. But, you know, Daniel is very well-versed in this.
Oh, I really am. It's unbelievable.
And not only that, but the second point is I picked Portland and Chicago to come out of this, so I have no place to be saying too much about this because I just completely botched my picks. So
you know what that means? You have to pull out the old Willy Wonka routine. You lose. Good day, sir.
I love that movie.
I know.
Gene Wilder was great in that. But so yeah, the final will be at Rio Tinto, October 1st, and I guess we'll wait until then to make any predictions on that, but because a lot of things can happen. But yeah, it's good for DC to actually have something that they're playing for. That could be a real boost to them in a season that is just a lost season. Everything going against them except for this tournament.
Exactly.
Which for New York and Philadelphia fans, doesn't he? You know, would have liked to see him crash out against the Kickers, but. Sorry, Robert.
Those Richmond Kickers.
And I guess there's probably some CONCACAF Champions League stuff that I could mention, but I just didn't dig it up. I think
that's okay.
Houston's playing this week.
Yes, they are. Houston Dynamo will be hosting W Connection of Trinidad and Tobago over at the BBVA Compass. Actually, no, they'll be in Trinidad.
No,
I apologize for that. The Galaxy will be home against their opponents. Don't remember what country they are from, but they'll be taking Cartagena, which I'm assuming they're Guatemalan.
Sure. yeah, that's what Wikipedia is for right now. So,
yeah, exactly. And all right, that's it. And then, of course, that's on Tuesday night on August the 20th. And on Wednesday night, August 21st, Montreal will be at the road at Herdia. They're, I think, a Salvadorian in the group that they're with, the San Jose Earthquakes with. And that'll be on Wednesday night, August the 21st at 10 o'clock.
Cartagena is Costa Rican, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Cartagena. Thank you very much.
Is that how you say it? I have no clue.
Cartagena, you know, look, if you remember Romancing the Stone, they went to Cartagena in Colombia. So that's why I said what I said, Cartagena. I don't know how that, so Cartagena, we'll go with that.
Yeah, we will go with that. And so, you know, tune into Fox. I guess it's Fox Sports 1 now we'll have that.
No,
so.
Actually, the funny thing is this will be Fox Soccer Plus. It's still going on, Fox Soccer Plus.
And thus, no one will watch.
Except for you and me.
I don't have Fox Soccer Plus.
Well, then it's just me then. Boy, I luck out.
you definitely luck out. That's some good stuff to be watching. So.
I know. It's going to be great.
Well, Daniel, I think we've come to the end of the show here. I thank you for coming on, filling in for Robert. You've done a great job picking up the almost as a co-host here. I expected nothing less.
Hey, listen, you know, once again, you know, we're friends from the original MLS Talk podcast. And, you know, I've always said to you when you ventured on, you and Robert ventured into this, and you said to me that, you know, whenever you need me to come on, I'm here for you guys. You know that, you know, you're always ready to come on my show, and I'm ready to come on for you guys. So, you know, I'm always grateful to help you guys out.
And I know Robert appreciates not having to worry about, handing this over to anybody. He knows that it's in good hands. So, you know, I think it went pretty well here. So, till next time, for Daniel Feuerstein, I'm Earl Reed. Well, and for Robert Hay, I'm Earl Reed. This is the United States Football Show. And until next time, we hope you get all 3 points.